1982, Ann Fagan with Florence Joseph interviewing Carolyn Friedman Kingsberger. Before we start, Mrs. Kingsberger, would you just state your address for us, please?
I live at 1309 Murdoch, M-U-R-D-O-C-H Road.
That's
Pittsburgh, 70.
That's good. Thank you so much. And I think perhaps to start, we would just like to hear
Would you like my telephone number in there?
No, we'll get it later. Thank you. What we'd like to hear about is those early years that you remember
before
when you were a little girl.
Yeah.
Before you got to Pittsburgh. Will you tell us about that little town?
I will. It's unique. Well, you want me to start?
Please, sure.
Well, I was born in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. And I always like to inject here that we West Virginians were brighter than Virginians. We stayed with the Union because we were part of Virginia because before we came West Virginia. And I figured that that was all for the good on our discussion. Well, now, you tell me when not to do what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're doing fine.
All right, huh?
Sure.
Well, I used to say Point Pleasant had 3,000 inhabitants, and my husband would always add facetiously, that includes all the dogs, that 3,000. It was very small. And what I consider important about myself is that my family was pioneers down there. My father and uncle helped haul the fire wagon along. They rode the mail over the Ohio River to Gallipolis. We had no post office. And my uncle, who had no children, was always on the Board of Education. And no one ever called him Mr. They all called him Uncle Joe. Now that's a wonderful compliment. Am I going too much in detail?
No, you're fine. I wonder if it was unusual in that you were, I would assume, one of a few Jewish families.
Oh, that is very important. We were the only one. I used to think my family was bright, but after they set up a town like that in the United States, I had my doubts, but it was. I'm so glad of that I was brought up like that. Now, you have to remember, we were part of Virginia. So in this little town, there was a Northern and Southern Baptist Church, 3,000 people, a Northern and Southern Presbyterian Church. Only one Episcopal, there weren't enough Episcopalians. No, I have one or two Catholic families, and you know the Catholics, they had a priest come over. Now, I don't know how my folks did it, but they kept us in the faith. And needless to say, they were very reformed to do that. In fact, I didn't know there were any Jewish holidays but Yom Kippur, because they didn't let us go to school. But when we came up to Pittsburgh, all at once I discovered there was Seder and what's the rest of them? You all not too good either. Hanukkah and, you know, all the only ones I knew about was Christmas, not Hanukkah. I didn't know what it was. I used to call it Chinuto when I said it. And how ignorant can you be?
Did you feel very different from the other children?
In the past? No, I never knew what anti-Semitism was. And I always loved this little note. You know, we lived there all our lives until my family moved to Pittsburgh. And that was on account of me. That's another part of the story. All the town came out, all the 3,000 people. And we had two railroads down there. It was a sort of crossroads. We had the Kanawha and Michigan, and the Baltimore and Ohio, which went to Washington. And they stood there, and as the train pulled out, it went around the bend, and they sang, until we meet at Jesus' feet, and again, a farewell to us. And we didn't think it was strict. We thought it was nice.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt us.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? Early life. And I actually went to school in a one room, the kind you read about, you know, a red brick schoolhouse with a pot-bellied stove to keep you warm. And it was like going to a private prep school. There were so few people in the class, you got all this individual attention, which did pretty good. And in Point Pleasant, there was no library, but the most important people in town, McCulloch's, took the Atlantic Monthly and whatever else was highbrow, and they saved them. And if you wanted a reference, they would look to see if you could. Now, you know, that is primitive, isn't it? Now, is that enough of the primitive side? Now,
had your grandparents also lived?
I never had grandparents. My maternal grandmother died in her 40s, and my paternal grandmother I never knew. We never had grandparents, but we had a delightful thing. My two brothers married two sisters, and my mother and father had six children, and the uncle and aunt had none. So if you couldn't get it from your father and mother, you went to Uncle Joe and Aunt Nettie, and you got it.
Did your parents and uncle and aunt talk about the family's immigration to America?
No, not much. I once asked, Uncle Joe came first, and I said to him, how did you ever come to settle down? Look where you, what your background is, Europe, New York, Baltimore, and you settle. He said, because when we got here, the people were so kind to us. Now that's nice, isn't it? Really nice. And we were always part of the population. We weren't Jews, we were just people.
You mentioned that the family left Point Pleasant because of you, which is something.
Well, my sweetheart was named James Leftwich. Now that's a Welsh name. It sounds sort of Jewish, doesn't it? And Jim and I were pretty close together, and they were afraid we'd get married. So they had, how do you stop something? You get away from it. So they decided to move. And Jim Leftwich became president of Woolworth Company. I always used to throw that up to my husband. I sure made a mistake in not marrying Jim Leftwich. Now, you want to know how I got in touch with him? I had 10 shares of Woolworth stock. And they sent out a brochure and it had James Leftwich called a ballad or something like that. And I wrote Woolworth, could Mr. James Leftwich have ever lived in Point Pleasant? And I get a letter from Jim Leftwich, where in the world do you get that mister for me? Nice, isn't it? Really nice.
Tell us about coming to Pittsburgh and
They decided to come to Pittsburgh because my brother, who lived in Steubenville, Ohio, ran our business there, and my mother thought she would be near him. And I, you know, there's always an older child in an immigrant family who makes all the decisions. And I said, well, why don't we just go straight to Pittsburgh? What's the use of monkeying around with Wheeling or Steubenville? And that was good advice, wasn't it? So we moved here. And my brother and my two brothers came up here every Sunday for dinner. And I must tell you about Maggie, a sacred memory. And Maggie, I don't, you're all housekeepers. There were six of us, and I knew Uncle Joe, eight, and somebody else, but always about 10. And Maggie would have a full-blown dinner at noon. How did she do it? She froze the ice cream, if I turned the ice cream freezer, I'd have to lick the dash. You wonder how she made ice cream? She took a pound of fruit like bananas and all the cream that was needed, and that was the ice cream. Imagine how good it was.
Where did you live in Pittsburgh?
Before we here?
When you first came?
First, when we moved here, we lived on South Graham Street. And after I got married, my husband, who loved my father, he called him Colonel. And he was used to that because I had a dog named Colonel. And we thought that was altogether fitting and proper to transfer the title. When we got here, that's where I am, not, is that right?
Right, you're
at
South Graham.
Where we live. When I got married and moved up to Squirrel Hill with my husband, my husband persuaded my father to move up here too. So he moved to Bartlett Street, Bartlett and Murdoch. And I could write a lot about that house. You talk about energy, all of it went out, every crack in the window. Oh my God, which German was very expensive.
Let's talk about the difference between living in that small town and living in Pittsburgh.
Well, we made a good transition. And when my brother wanted to go to the University of Michigan, they took him on, abeyance of his, until he proved he knew enough, because he had no credit. Our high school was not as good as him. Well, Louis, I never thought he was too bright. He made good, and now then, our school became accredited, and they kept him. Now, you know, we were very fortunate in being in a small town with these erudite people who lived there. We always associated with intellectual elite. Really, we did. And we did some to our education, and I don't know what, but it did. Would you ever hear today somebody reading Dickens to entertain the children? Well, that was the way I was entertained. My best friend's mother would read Dickens to us. Now, you know, that's good, isn't it?
Sure.
And we were too ignorant to know how good it was. We just enjoyed it.
Yeah. Did you go to school here in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I went to the University of Pittsburgh as a special because I was studying voice. I thought I was the next human height to come along. She was ugly, and so was I, but we both had nice quality of voice, and I didn't think that I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't make it, so I didn't. And what else did you have?
Were there other interests she had besides singing when you were a girl? Other interests besides the vocalizing that you
That was my... I really figured that was my major, that Pitt was just, you know, sort of tripping along, and I always went as a special, and I always took the exams to get the credits, and all at once I got a Bachelor of Economics. I think I might have been a little ahead of my time. I majored in economics and political science, because I figured if you didn't have those things, you wouldn't be living in a place like Pittsburgh to understand the world. And would you believe it? Here was a fringe benefit. 50 years later, I got a free dinner at Pitt because I was a 50-year graduate. And I got a little bitty orchid and that mug in there. And of course, my name in the annals.
Were there many other women
yeah.
in your major?
Well, that my age then?
No, in your major, when you were an undergraduate.
No, I was the only one in some of them. And the men, she thinks all right. I'll tell you an interesting part of my background, you mentioned that. You know, can you believe it, in this little town of 3,000, we had a northern and southern school. white and black. And nobody thought there was anything wrong with it. What do you want to call it then? And when I got up here and went to Pitt, I sat, went up to the class, and all at once a black man came in. Now, what should I do? Will I stay or go? Well, I was pretty smart, I stayed. But that was an event to sit down with black people like that. We just didn't do it, that's all. And they thought we were all right, we thought they were all right. You want to know a nice little story about that?
Sure.
In those days, a black family by the name of Dolman came up and got the laundry, soiled laundry, washed it all. And they took it down to their place. And you've seen this in the movies, a black kettle. And that's where they boiled the clothes. You know, it's primitive. Now, my mother, after I came along, decided that my brother shouldn't always wear white clothes. You know, cut down. And she also told Mrs. Dolman, Aunt Mariah, and she says, Mrs. Friedman, as long as I live, now here's the punchline, Mr. Sidney, two and a half years old, would wear white clothes. Now, that's a good story. I think it's a wonderful story. And we loved Aunt Mariah. She loved us. And my mother would always give Dolman, his name, she called him, a drink when he came up. And one day she played a trick on him. Do you all make old fashions where you put bitters in it, dash of bitters? She gave him a drink of bitters, so he would quit begging for something.
Sounds like a sense of humor runs in the family.
But this is interesting about the way we were there. It seems so big to me, you know, and remember, am I going into detail too much?
No, you're fine.
I just checked. I'm just checking.
I mean, stop me, you know.
No.
Our lot where we lived was way back, seems forever to me, it was so big. And back of us was a colored family. And we were not allowed to go over that fence and play with the colored children. We didn't call them black and we didn't call them niggers. We weren't allowed to. We called them colored people. They were colored. And when they looked for me, I had climbed the fence and was over with the colored people. I liked it. It shows you how you can overcome, how you can become integrated naturally, doesn't it? Now that's a true story.
Let's go back now to the time in Pittsburgh when you first met your husband and those early years of courtship or marriage.
When I first met him, he belonged to the country club and I was out as a guest. And there was a little slope where they sat on the grass. And my mother asked me when I came home, did you meet anybody? That's what they came to Pittsburgh for me to meet somebody. I says, yes, a very rude man was introduced to me. And he hardly got up when he said, how do you do? My husband.
What year was this?
What
was the year when you and your husband
were married? In September 1913. And I was married in February 1920.
Can you tell us a little bit about the event, the wedding itself?
The wedding, my wedding?
Yeah.
It was very sad. My mother got a very bad gallbladder attack. The day she was out shopping for the refreshments for a reception. And she was really cute. She sneaked out of bed when she felt strong enough. And one little sidelight on that, in our parlor, somebody said, we ought to have the parlor papered. Look at that dark corner up there. The dark corner was they never washed the walls. it, you know, is an accumulation of some idea, but I don't know what. And, but they did do it. And she wanted to see how it looked with that light. And we didn't have any church where we lived, where they didn't watch the curtains. They shook them out and put them away. And we lived in a house, the windows went clear down like the movies you see. And one wall was walled up on with bricks. That was in the Civil War as protection against the Yankees.
This was the house on South Graham?
No, this was down to that house. That,
on
South Graham. It was a regular house. That's where that, we thought it was a shadow on the ceiling, but it wasn't. It was a Pittsburgh church. You know, you know that. Are you all Pittsburgh?
Now, when you and your husband married, were you involved in his career, or were you busy with things?
He was involved with mine. He couldn't stand it, my being all, you know, everybody waited till dinner time to call you up.
Yeah.
And he used to say, I'm going to out and kill him. And I said, well, you don't answer the phone very politely. He says, I do it perfectly. I don't want him butting in my family life. He just hated it. And I was a kind, one of my favorite stories about myself is, I felt sorry for Atlas spinning the world on his head and took it away from him. Said I'd relieve him. But I gave it back. I couldn't straighten the world out either.
Could you try?
Yeah, I tried.
Did you, I want to get to your involvement with the World Federalism
yes.
just a little bit. Were there other organizations you were involved in too, or other things you did?
I was a member of the Sisterhood and the Council, you name them. I didn't belong to the union.
You were an early volunteer.
Yeah, I was a very early volunteer.
Can you tell us a bit about your early
volunteer? I'll tell you something funny. You know, Irene Kaufman Settlement, they now call it, what is it up here on Forbes Street, a Jewish center?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, if the thing to do was if you were, well, what's the word, elite enough to go down and volunteer, you'd do it. And I volunteered to teach ethics. Now, you know, ethics is not religion wholeheartedly. I told you my religious background. Does the name Miriam Schoenfield register? You're too young. Well, she ran that volunteer thing at Irene Kaufman. And I never will forget. And she says, now we'll all go up to our classrooms and discuss the, what is it in March? Purim, I guess it was. When you have Seder, isn't it Purim? Is that, you're all not too good either.
Passover.
Yeah.
Passover?
No, it wasn't Passover.
Purim.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a story about Passover from 2012. Well, I didn't know what they were talking about, tell you the truth, but I've told you how smart I was. I said, now I'll tell you how we're going to do this today. We're going to give everybody a chance to tell us what Purim means. Well, you know, little Jewish children had to stop them. And therefore, I learned what Purim was. Now, I thought that was a dirty trick on the part of Miriam Schoenfeld. I'm down to teach ethics. Well, I got out of it, but it is a good story, isn't it?
It's great.
Tell us about your teaching at the Irish Conference.
Well, ethics, what do you teach ethics? You don't steal or knock people over, you try to do things right. But there was a very high-class housekeeper down there. I forget her name for the moment. You know, really, there are not many Jewish aristocrats. They say if you scratch any one of us, there's a peddler in your background. I think that's true. Well, this woman was way up. She was from Cincinnati. And she said to me, Mrs., I guess my name is Friedman then. Miss Friedman, I believe this thing down here is helpful. When we don't have to lock everything up, the kids stole. That's a good story, isn't it?
Was this within the 20s or was this earlier?
This was before 1920. See, we moved here in 1913. And in that of 1913 to 1919, I was Miss Freeman.
Do you have any other memories about the Jewish community during those years?
Well, I'll tell you, when we moved here, Cherokee was different than it is today. They had the Associated, I think it's called the Jewish Associated Charities, and they issued a book that how much everybody gave to it. You couldn't hide. And people who gave the most, like everything, they got the big jobs from the accolades and all that stuff. But then they changed that, you know, from the Associated Charities. And I don't know what became before the United Federation. I don't know. Still gave to charity. And in the United Jewish Federation, you also belong to the United Way. And I always I pledge allegiance to the flag over everything else. I really love the Republic. And I gave more to the United Way than to the Jewish Federation. Now, if I'd been smart, I'd have given as much as I could to have status. But I didn't. I figured the United Way, there were so many things that I gave to, and whatever the $5 to each one of them was, I gave to the United Way. And I gave a nominal amount to the United Jewish Federation.
You're a very busy young woman,
though,
was volunteering.
Yeah, that was when I was volunteering.
Were there other areas where you volunteered besides the Irene Kaufman Center?
Well, let's see. Well, Council of Jewish Women. I did the publicity for that. It's interesting to me. When anybody ever asks me to do it, they always ask me to do the publicity. I guess nobody else would do it. And there was a woman here by the name of Fetchheimer, Clara Fetchheimer. She was sort of an aristocrat. And her initials were C. I don't remember her middle initial, CF. And I always signed my name. I had a good Jewish name, Loth. You'd never know that this infidel came out of the Loth family. Morris Loth collected all the funds for Isaac Wise to start the temple. There's a big monument to him in the cemetery. And my initials were Caroline Loth Friedman, CLF. And Fetchheimer had the nerve to ask me not to use my initials. Well, you know what I did. I said, I have to. Well, I think it's a good story, don't you?
You have a lot of good stories.
Yeah, I really have.
Can you, since you've been interested in politics and in economics, do you remember much about those war years?
Yeah, well, in the war, my goodness, I wore myself out. That's good, wore yourself out. I went down there every day at headquarters, and I was lucky. I got in with a head person. She was brought here, her name was Gage, to run the Junior League, something about the Junior League. And the Junior League letter for the volunteer war effort. And I sat right next to her. She liked me. I liked her. And all the time? Bad, isn't it?
What kind of things did you do in the war effort?
Down what people wanted to do, and I remember one thing she gave me. So many Jewish people had volunteered to be talkers, you know, give lectures on it. And Elena Gage said to me, "How do you like this one?" Somebody wrote in, there were so many Jewish people in the talkers bureau. And I says, "Well, Elena, you know there is such a thing as anti-Semitism." She was certainly not one.
Did you have a sense of much anti-Semitism during this war years?
Did I have?
Did you?
I don't know. I never ran into any. Maybe I was too dumb not to know it. You remember Eisenhower once said, that he was so fortunate he never knew how poor they were. Well, I never felt I was in part of anti-Semitism. Now, I'll tell you a story about that. I went to Pitt as a special because I was going to become Schumannite the second. There was a girl sat next to me by the name of Love in an English story, English class. And she came up to me and says, "Carolyn, how do you like this?" Somebody asked me if I was Jewish. Now, this is an English course at Pitt, and I looked at it. I says, "Well, I think her name was Irene, I don't remember. You know, you have olive skin and lovely dark eyes. I can see how they might make that mistake. I never let on that I was Jewish." Now, that's bad, really bad. "I never beat my breast about it."